Do you remember what it was like to have babies and toddlers and to have to feed them and dress them and change them and then try to get yourself ready? And by the time you did all of that, somebody needed to be fed and changed and dressed again. So I get it. I remember how that was. I know it was challenging. I appreciate the effort that you guys go to all the time to get here. Hi, Trace. How are you? My challenge this morning was a little bit less significant, I'll admit that. But when I went to have coffee this morning, I noticed that my sweet husband had accidentally bought fat-free half and half, okay? And you guys know what the main ingredient is in fat-free half and half? You know, right? It's sadness. It's just sadness, okay? So I had a little overcoming to do as well, so you can feel a little sorry for me. But I made it, and you made it. And I want this day and this year to be of great encouragement for you. So I know in my heart that that is why I said yes so quickly, because that's what I want to do. I want to be a part of that for you. As Tracy said, I'm a wife. Scott and I have been married for almost 24 years. We'll celebrate that anniversary at the end of this year. And I'm a mom. My son Russell is 17. He's a senior in high school. And our son Douglas will be 15 in just a couple weeks. I'm trying not to say he's 15. I have trouble with pushing his age forward, and I don't want to do that. But he's only 14 right now for 27 more days, and he's a freshman in high school. Please believe me when I tell you that this will go by so very quickly. Their young lives will fly, and you will blink, and it will be over. This past weekend, I sat down with Russell as he applied to college. He applied to college. This process is a little different than I remember that it was when I was a senior in high school. I don't remember a lot about it, but I remember it was just a packet, and I had a pen, and I sat at a table, and I don't remember where my mom was. I don't think I needed her for that. But they need their moms now because there's all kinds of information that they ask for that he doesn't know. I don't think he knows his Social Security number. I don't think he knows, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I was with him, and we were at my computer, and of course it had some kind of glitch because my computer always has some kind of glitch because technology hates me. But Russell is our in-house IT person, and his fingers just sort of flew over the keyboard, and in about 30 seconds, it was done. It was fixed. And I just looked at him, and honestly, tears started filling up my eyes, and I just said, "Baby, what am I going to do next year when you're not here?" And he was sitting next to me, and he's 6 foot tall, and when he's sitting, he still has to lean over to hug me. And so he leaned over and hugged me. And he said, "Don't worry, Mom. Before I leave, I'll install a remote access program on your computer and I can fix it from my dorm." But I wasn't crying because I'm losing my in-house tech support. It goes really, really fast. In my years of being a wife and being a mom, I have done it right and I have done it wrong, and sometimes I have done it so very wrong. Then there have been a few victories where I have just been brought to my knees with gratitude to a God who is the only reason I can stand here and share anything at all with you today. Thank you for letting me do that. I really appreciate it. I don't take this responsibility lightly at all. Tracy asked me today to speak about words. Coincidentally enough, and I'm not sure that she totally knows this about me, maybe she knew a little bit, but I'm cuckoo about words, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs about words. I love them. I'm crazy about them. I love to speak them and think about them and think about how they're pronounced and what the origin is and how to string them together and how many I can jam into a single day. Just ask my husband, okay? I love them. When I was a little girl, I used to read the dictionary, okay? Now, I just subscribe to a Word of the Day email, and I read grammar blogs. There are grammar blogs. Do you know this? Are you in on this fun? Okay? I have a favorite grammar debate. There's grammar debates, okay? And if you'd read the grammar blog, you'd know that. My favorite debate is whether or not the word than is a preposition or a subordinating conjunction. And I love to think about this. And I love to talk to people who like to think about this. I'm that girl. My kids roll their eyes at me a lot. Before I was a mom, I was an English teacher, and that was a profession that I chose solely not because I love children. They're okay. I like my own a lot. I like my friends' kids. Yours are okay. Okay? But I chose to be an English professor because or English teacher. I wanted to be an English professor. That didn't happen. I was an English teacher, and that was a profession that I chose because I love words. And I specifically wanted students to love words as well. Most importantly, I wanted them to love the power that words have, because we all know that words can hurt us and they can heal us. Words can lift us and they can diminish us. They are life and they are death and they matter. And I wanted my students to know that. And I want to talk to you about that today. How they matter in our lives as women. How we can speak life versus death into our families, with our friends, and to ourselves. I want you to think for just a moment about times in your life when you've heard words of life and when you've heard words of death spoken to you. And I know that we can all think of instances of both situations, but I bet what popped into your head most quickly was a time when you heard words of death. They just seem to stick with us a little bit longer. That's just how it is. When I was in the third grade, Brian Johnson, yes, I remember his name. I remember his face. I remember the freckles on his nose. So freckle-faced Brian Johnson in third grade told me I had fat thighs. Yeah, I know. I know. I should have punched him, right? But, you know, and back then I could have, and I could have gotten away with it. Today, you can't do that. I could have punched him. Dang it. No, glad I didn't. Probably the right response. But if he had said it to me today, I would have said, yeah, I do. And we could have gone on our merry ways. But when I was 9, that wasn't true. And even so, even though it wasn't a truth, I can remember where I was, who was around to hear that, and exactly how it made me feel. And even though I'm not hurt by that, and I haven't been hurt by that in a long time, and I've processed through that, I still think of that statement a lot. It pops into my head. The whole sticks and stones thing, blah, blah, blah. We know that's a total lie. We know that words can hurt us. And I actually could have titled this talk, Everything I Know About Words of Death, I've Learned from the Real Housewives. And some of you know this, that I have been studying the Real Housewives. I don't say watching, because it's not entertainment for me. No, 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 it's science, it's research, okay? I approach it like an anthropologist would, okay? Like Margaret Mead studying the indigenous Samoans, okay? I'm watching the Real Housewives, and I'm just trying to glean some understanding about how these rich women really interact in their natural habitats. Total science. Okay? Nothing at all to do with their pretty, pretty, pretty shoes. Okay? Nothing. Or their fabulous jewelry. But in my research, I've discovered that there are nothing but hurtful words spoken by these women that are so very rich in the world and so very, very poor in spirit. Words of death over their husbands and their children, words of death over each other. And in all seriousness, this show is actually a perfect demonstration of how the words that we speak are simply a reflection of the condition of our hearts. We do have control over the words we speak. We can choose words of life and suppress words of death. This takes discipline and self-control, and it also requires some considerable introspection into the condition of our hearts. I know this because I haven't always been good at defaulting to words of life, even in the best of circumstances. I can be naturally skeptical, which is a short skip to critical, which is a slippery slope, ladies, to judgmental. I'm quick thinking, I'm quick tongued, and I can make an articulate and a cutting argument before you even know what hit you. Just ask my husband. I can use all of this against people. I am not proud of the fact that I have done this in my life. This is not in any way or shape or form the way God intended for these gifts that he has given me to be used. It's taken a lot of discipline and a lot of prayer to get this under control, and I've had to assess why, if I'm bumped, would death spill out instead of life? What's the underlying cause? Am I somehow feeling unloved or misunderstood or unvalued or unworthy? Or any of the above, or some combination at any given moment? Am I struggling with some kind of family of origin issue, or some words that were spoken to me in the past? When I did this heart check, I realized that I had to determine I wasn't good at naturally speaking words of life, and then I kind of understood that I was really actually struggling myself with my value, my identity. And for me, getting that under control was a process that involved getting to the root of my identity. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But coming to that understanding meant that I could move forward in choosing to speak life versus death. And I won't lie, just like anything worthwhile, it takes, and it took then, and it still takes, a tremendous amount of discipline to control that. I have so many words that I want to speak all the time. It's a constant process for me to be able to keep them into check. But I'm not the woman that I was 15 years ago, or 6 months ago, or 2 weeks ago. And you don't have to be the woman you were yesterday either. There's forward progress, which is what has given me the fighting chance to be a wife and a mom who does speak life to her family, to Scott and to Russell and to Dougie. We call him Dougie. It's the name that just kind of popped out when he came out. He was so cute, just looked like a little turtle. He was so sweet, that's what my sister said. And we started calling him that, and that's pretty much what we all call him all the time, even his teachers, coaches, people that have known him since. It's just never going away. It's stuck. Actually, a lot of the time, I call him Dougabug, which gets really hard to control on the sidelines of his soccer games because way to go, Dougabug, is not something that he really likes all that much at this point. Didn't bother him before. We're getting to the point where it really bothers him. But one of the primary purposes that I have in my life as a woman, in my family, is to speak words of life to them. That's a big one of my purposes. First and foremost to Scott, and second to our children. I have been good at this, and I have been bad at this. I have told Scott he is my best friend, and I have told our children that they are the best gifts that I have ever received. My bad has ranged from tongue-in-cheek comments like the times, yes, multiple times, when I have told one of our kids that he writes like a serial killer. It's so teeny, 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 tiny. It's just like a serial killer, I promise you. But that's not encouraging, and I know that. And we sort of laugh about it, but it's not encouraging. But then it goes to the hardcore stuff, such as when during a very, very dark point in our marriage, I told Scott that I wished I had never met him. And I can't take that back. That was not a good day and not a good time in our life. Because my job as a wife is to build Scott up and not to tear him down, to speak highly of him and highly to him. And honestly, to do this without regard of whether he deserves it or not. Because that's the real clincher. It's easy to speak life to someone who has earned this favor. It's hard to do it if they have not, husbands included. Scripture tells us that older women are supposed to teach younger women to love their husbands. And on our wedding days, we would never believe that was anything we would have to be taught. But God, who does not waste his words, knows and knew that we would have to be reminded that those love-colored glasses would break and that we would have to choose many, many days to speak life. He would know that there would be times and possibly seasons when my heart would swirl with anger and frustration and maybe loneliness and resentment, and I would have to choose to speak life to Scott over him and over our marriage. So what does he need to hear to be encouraged and to be built up? He needs to hear that he's my priority. There's a new program in the Real Housewives series, and I'm researching, so I had to check it out. It's called Ladies of London. It's awesome and horrible all at the same time, okay? It's basically the Real Housewives, only they have cute British accents and titles, like Duchess and Countess, okay? So anyway, I had to watch it. I didn't have a choice. But recently, one of the characters was describing how driven she was to make the business that she had started successful. And in describing why she felt justified in the time and energy she did on this effort, she said, "It's just not enough to be someone's wife." And I could hear, I could feel the dagger that she had just put in her husband's heart with those words. Because I want Scott to hear that, yes, it is enough. That he and this family we have created are enough. That I can and I do have the freedom to do all sorts of things in my life and in my job outside of caring for them, but that I am committed to making this my priority. That I will devote myself to him first and then to our children at the expense of my own desires if I'm in a season of my life when I just can't do both at the same time. Scott needs to hear that he will win if there was ever a contest for my time and my energy. He needs to hear that I will never leave him. Now, I've already shared that I haven't always spoken this into our, this kind of life into our marriage. And in fact, there have been times when I've done the exact opposite. I remember one time when I was a younger mom or younger wife, and I heard Billy Graham's wife, Ruth Graham, interviewed by a reporter. And he asked her if she had ever considered divorcing her husband. And she replied, "Divorce? No. Murder? Yes." And of course, we laugh at that. It's obviously facetious, but we understand it. But the point is that she knew that it was life-giving in her marriage for her husband to hear that she had closed her exits, that divorce was not going to be any sort of solution to their marital problems that she was going to consider. And I'm going to step over here for just a minute, and I'm going to clarify that I am not talking about situations where there is abuse or abandonment. I am not speaking to you when I talk about closing exits. I want to make sure that I'm really clear about that. Let me come back over. So between Ruth Graham and a great mentor, I learned to deeply understand the power of life I had in my marriage and how my words would be one of the primary ways that I was going to harness that power. I started speaking words of life into Scott even when I didn't mean them and even when I didn't feel them. I made my voice follow my will. And guess what? Those challenges that led me to say, "I wish I never met you" on that day, they never went away. They're with us today, but I choose to speak life. Over the almost 24 years of our marriage, I have chosen to tell him that he is irreplaceably significant to me and to our family, and I have learned to echo God's word in affirming to him who I know God made him to be, a strong and capable leader. And just as we know that words can hurt, we have to know and have to believe that words can heal. Words healed my marriage, and they continue to heal my husband's heart that was so broken from the family that he came from. Scott needs to hear that we are grateful for the way that he provides for us. He's a self-employed realtor, and sometimes the market is good, and sometimes it's not. And he needs to hear that this will not ever affect or change the respect that I have for the fact that he burdens the shoulder of provision so well. And it is a burden, women, it is a burden. And we don't totally understand it. And our guys go out every day and they slay dragons. And it's a burden. And he needs to hear that I notice when he can't sleep sometimes because he's awake thinking about how to pay for college or how to pay for our retirement or how to pay for the shoes that I probably shouldn't have bought. But he wants me to have because he's sweet. He needs to hear those things. He needs to know that I believe that he provides for us well. And I never forget to tell him I think he's a total stud. Every time he kills a scorpion, which is a lot, every time he takes my car to the shop, every time he makes pancakes for our boys on the weekends, and every time he closes a deal, and a million other times, I tell him I'm grateful every day that I get to be his wife. Because, ladies, somebody wants to tell my husband that. And I need it to be me. And Scott wants it to be me. And our marriage needs that woman to be me who's telling him he's a total stud. And what about the words that I speak to our children? Like the story I shared earlier about the boy in my childhood, the words that we hear when we're young are very powerful. And when those words come from a parent, that power is magnified by a thousandfold. Last week, I was chatting with my hairstylist, who I've known for a really long time, and we have this very easy relationship, and so we just kind of slip back into conversation, and we don't talk about politics very often. She has a very different life than I do, and so I want to keep her as my hairstylist, so we table that usually. But she made a comment about the fact that she had just seen the movie about presidential candidate Ben Carson's life, and she was really struck by this one fact about this story. The fact that Ben Carson had overcome a family that was extremely broken, extreme poverty, racism, rampant racism, and the projections of his teachers that he wasn't going to amount to anything. And we all know who Ben Carson has become today. He says that he feels that he was able to do this in large part because his mother told him he could be that man. So my hairstylist then compared this to her nephew, who's in his early 20s. and he's not doing very well. She shared that her brother and his wife have over and over and over in this boy's life, in their child's life, have told him he's simply not good enough. And she's now afraid that her nephew irreversibly believes this lie and is really floundering in his life. And I know that's a really extreme case. I would bet money, all of my money, which isn't a lot, but all of it, I would bet, okay, that there's not a single mom in this room who would ever tell her child that he or she was not good enough. But I know in my parenting, I have said words that mean the same thing to them. I know there have been times when I have done this in the name of discipline or making sure that I just knew that they could do better at X, Y, or Z, or a number of rationalizations for why I have done this. But I've said to them, you're not good enough, even when I didn't mean that. I have to be careful about those words. Because my job as their mom is to reflect God's heart for them, and he would never say that to them. He would never imply that to them. My words to them need to reflect that, and they need to say that I believe, just like God says, that they are fearfully and wonderfully made, that they have unique gifts that will be used in their bright futures as truly great men, men who are truly great not because of any achievement that they have in education or wealth or power or fame, for none of those reasons, but only for the reasons that their character is strong and that they love God and they love his people. And that is true greatness. And I need to say that to my children because that's what God says about my children. I need to reflect that heart. My boys need to hear that I delight in them. And I love that word, delight. It's one of my favorite. And flourish is one of my favorite too, so I'm really happy about that. They need to hear that I delight in them, in what makes them different, in what excites them, in what they look forward to. When I was pregnant with Russell, my favorite baby expert, because you know you always have a favorite baby expert, and mine was Dr. William Sears. And I remember reading in one of his books that by the time our children are 8, we should have the equivalent of a PhD in them, because that's about how long it takes to get a PhD. And I took that to mean that what I needed to do as their mom was to study them so that I could know them, so that I could know the uniqueness about them, so that I could use unique words that their unique words, their unique ears could hear, because they're not the same. My kids are not the same. The only thing they share in common is their parents. I'm not kidding you. I really seriously have thought about doing a DNA test. They're so different from each other. It doesn't stop, though, when they're 8. I've had to they keep growing and changing, so I need to keep studying them so that I can keep learning their uniqueness and how that's going to manifest itself, so that I can keep encouraging them in the way that they feel encouraged and love them in the way that they feel loved and discipline them in the way that is effective for them, because that's different too. I've had hundreds of conversations with Russell about technology that I don't understand. I like literally don't understand one word he said to me, not one, okay? Maybe the adjectives, I don't know. Not, even then I don't think I get it. I'm lost all the time with that. I have listened to Dougie quote sports statistics. I swear he's a walking almanac. I'm not kidding you. One time I was at a lunch, and I didn't even think he was paying attention, and some of the adults were saying, who was it that won that lacrosse championship in 1984? And he looks up from his lunch, and he goes, Duke, and then goes back down and starts eating. And it's just kind of one of those things that he can do. So I've listened to him quote these statistics, and I've listened to him tell me that one new fact that he learned today about the Civil War. And sometimes I'm tired, but I listen anyway. And sometimes I have to suppress the really nagging feeling that there's a lot of laundry to be done, and I don't want to talk about Abraham Lincoln, and I don't want to talk about the plantations and the slave trade and all that kind of stuff. But he does. So when I don't understand what they're talking about or when I'm distracted, I need to focus myself because their words matter. And I need to have words that come back that show them that I delight in them. I delight in what makes them tick and what they're excited about. Those words that I say to them are sometimes only questions because I don't really understand what they're talking about. Or maybe all I can do is express just complete admiration for the fact that they learned all this on their own. That might be the only thing I can say, but those words are powerful to them. It shows them and tells them that I delight in who they are. I've spoken hope to them when they're worried or discouraged or scared. I promise you that the words, don't worry, baby, Mama's here. Those words work when they're toddlers, and they work when they're teenagers. I promise you they do. They're powerful. I have spent their childhood listening and speaking life to them so that I could earn the right to listen and speak life to them now when they are an adolescent and a young adult. My boys need to hear that I think their dad is the greatest thing since sliced bread, that I think he is all that and a bag of chips. They need to hear that I think he's that big of a stud, even when they roll their eyes when I say it. From the time they were small, I have often responded to them with, "You know who would know how to do this? Daddy. You know who we have to thank for all this? Daddy. You know who you should go ask about that? Your dad." My boys need to hear that I speak, that I think highly of their father, because I want them to choose wives who speak highly and think highly of them. They need to hear those words from me. Russell and Douglas have needed to hear that they were worth sacrificing my career. When I got pregnant with Russell, I was teaching, and I was 12 credits into a doctoral program in education. You heard me earlier misspeak and say I was an English professor. That's because it's in the back of my mind that I had wanted to do that at one point. I had grand plans to change the world in the field of English education. People were going to know who I was, my name would be on articles, and I would speak in Washington, and I would talk to senators and all kinds of people, and nobody knows who I am today. But I want my kids to know that a life devoted to them and devoted to their dad is worth everything that I potentially gave up. I'm on the precipice now of a new season in my life when I won't have children at home anymore. I have 4 really short years when I have kids at home. And maybe I'll pick up where I left off, and maybe I won't, and maybe I'll do something totally different. I don't know. I don't know what my journey's going to be and where it's going to take me. But I have wanted my children to hear words that have assured them that I don't regret my choice for a single moment. To hear words that have that convey to them that they are as great an achievement as anything I could have ever done in any other area of my life. The most important thing I want my kids to hear is that I believe in a great big God, and I trust a great big God. Several years before I was born, President Kennedy was assassinated. Several. Okay, do you hear me say that? It was several. Not that many, but several. Okay. Everyone in that generation can tell you where they were when this life-changing news happened, when they heard it. It's something that we kind of talk about at cocktail parties when you're with the people of that generation, and I'm closer to them, so I hear that more often. When I was 16 years old, the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up right after liftoff. I was walking between my English class and the library of the Saguaro High School campus, and the whole school stopped, and it came over the loudspeaker. And it was a big deal for our generation, how this happened, the lives that were lost. It was a big deal, and it was a lot of sadness for our country. And when Russell was 3 and Dougie was almost 1, the Twin Towers fell. And while my babies were sleeping still, I remember sitting in the living room and holding my head in my hands and thinking, I can't believe the world that they have to endure. In 232 days, my sweet firstborn will turn 18 years old, and he will have to register for the Selective Service. That's the draft. And don't tell me that the draft hasn't been implemented since the 70s. That does almost nothing to allay my fears. The world is a mess. There is conflict everywhere. And I literally can feel a countdown in my heart to when I'm going to have to ask my son to sign that paper. The world is full of broken bones and broken hearts and broken people. But my God is bigger than all the lions and all the tigers and all the bears. And he is my children's God, too. And they need to hear that I trust them to him. They need to hear that I believe that. They need to hear those powerful words from me, that I do not fear because he has it all in the palm of his hand. He formed them in my womb. He knows the number of hairs on their heads. He knows the depths of their hearts. He knows the plans that he has for them. And these are plans for a hope and a future, and not to harm them, but to prosper them. And it does not mean that their lives will be easy or without challenge. It does not mean that. It means they do have hope and they can trust that he sits on his sovereign throne. My words need to tell my children that they can be strong in a world that is simply not safe, and it never will be ever again. They have to reflect that truth, the words that I say to them. And of course, it can never be underestimated how much I use prayer as a way of speaking words of life into Scott and into my children. It's our only real access to the hearts of our husbands and to the hearts of our children. And prayer is truly life-giving words to our families. My words to my friends matter too. Of course they do. And in order to have any ability to speak words of life to them, I have to love them, and I have to serve them, and I have to be safe for them. And all those things have to exist first before I ever have a chance to speak life to any of my friendships. The true ability to speak life into someone else is an earned privilege. People have to know that you care before they care what you know. We know that. And so it is with our friends. I have a group of 5 girlfriends, and we are each other's very best friends. These friendships have developed and deepened over many, many years and through a lot of personal and marital celebrations and an equal number of tears in those areas. We have prayed for each other and served each other and sacrificed for each other, and in so doing, we have earned the right to speak to each other, to speak things that are true, even when truth is very hard to hear, to say things like, "I don't think you should leave him. I don't think that your children know that you understand God's heart for them. I think that maybe we need to talk about this in your life," to hear hard things when hard things are hard to hear, to speak encouragement and wisdom. We keep each other's confidences, we defend and advocate for each other, and we fiercely protect each other. It's actually kind of funny sometimes how our claws come out for each other. We seek reconciliation quickly if there's a conflict, and we forgive. To put this in a single sentence, we are safe for each other. These have been very successful friendships in my life. I've done a good job of speaking life into these friendships. Not all my relationships have gone that way. Sometimes I've spoken too much too soon before I have ever earned the right to be heard. Sometimes I've not been trustworthy. I've divulged confidential information, or I've made unkind or hurtful comments. Gossip is tantamount to death to a friendship, and we women regularly kill our friendships with gossip. It's kind of one of the crosses that we bear. So I've learned the hard way that speaking about my friends, or really this applies to anyone at all, that before I do that, I have to ask myself, is this my story to tell? Is this my information to share? Is sharing it going to help my friend or hurt her? Am I just rationalizing that it will help because I really just want to share it? Or is it truly helpful? Am I speaking to someone about this who loves my friend too and wants the best for her too? Am I saying something that is going to diminish her so that I can feel kind of elevated myself in some way? So much of the time, my answer to any of these questions means that I should just keep my mouth shut. I haven't always done that. This requires a great deal of thinking before speaking. As the years have gone by, it has become more muscle memory for my tongue than it was when I was younger, but I'm still not immune to grave mistakes in this area, and some more recently than I would ever want to admit. In my life now, though, when I've been a little bit older and gotten a little bit older and been more experienced with this, I can tell you that even when I make a mess in this area, I am very quick to say, "I have wronged you." My words have not a single validation for coming out of my mouth. There was no reason for them. Please forgive me. I don't rationalize and I don't justify. I fall on the sword that my wicked tongue drew in the first place. And then I step back and I accept the consequences that I still may have to know that I have changed the flavor of that friendship forever. Many years ago, I had a friend who did graciously forgive me after I said some very unkind things to her after we had a conflict. It was over our children, and we all know that those are hard because mama bear claws are sharp. And I said some unkind things. And she did graciously forgive me when I apologized. And then she said goodbye to our friendship. I wasn't safe anymore. Forgiveness and consequence are not mutually exclusive ideas. They coexist very nicely. It's important to remember that before we speak words of death. Our words with our family and our friends matter deeply, but I really believe that what matters most are the words that we speak to ourselves. Because this will dictate whether we succeed at speaking words of life to our families and our friends, or whether we are doomed to speak words of death. I told you earlier that at one point in my life, I really had to do some soul searching to figure out why there was this critical root in my spirit. I know that for some people, that this is a case of not having heard words of life when they were growing up, but this wasn't my case. So what was it? Why didn't I automatically default to speaking words of life? And why do I speak snark so fluently? It's like a second language. You know, when you can roll your eyes with anything you're saying, that's snark, okay? I'm good at it. I had to get to the bottom of why I was just really good at it for a really long time. Still really good at it, but I control it better now. What it came down for me, I told you, was that I had trouble with knowing my true identity. I had to figure out who I was and who defined me and what I was going to believe about myself. I had to figure out what words I was going to say about me to me. And for me, this really started with an assessment of who I was allowing to speak into my life. Who were those words? That meant taking stock of the friendships that I had at this time many years ago when I went through this process. And some of you know this part of my story. When Russell was just a baby, Scott and I had this group of friends, and we had all sort of come together just because we all happened to have kids at the same time. And you know how that works. Sometimes that's the commonality that you have, and you start hanging out together, and friendships start to evolve from that. And over the course of a couple of years, we both came to the realization that these were not life-giving friendships in any way. We would leave situations with them, and we'd both look at each other and think, I feel kind of sick to my stomach. Do you feel kind of sick to your stomach? And what we realized is that these were friends who were materialistic and kind of shallow. We didn't trust them. We didn't aspire to the same things as they did. And we honestly, because of all that, didn't really enjoy being around them. But that was who we had. And so I had to really take stock of that. I remember feeling every time I left a play date with them that my house wasn't nice enough, that the clothes that I wore weren't nice enough, that the clothes my baby wore weren't nice enough. How ridiculous is that? It's a baby. But I felt it, that I didn't drive the right car. I just constantly felt myself coming up short in this kind of comparison. And one day, I vividly remember this day. I put my head in my hands and I prayed, Lord, I need new friends. Please, this isn't working. This isn't working for me. It's not working for us, for me and for Scott. And he answered that very, very quickly, like he was waiting for me to say it. I really think he was waiting because he had so much more after that to give me. And it was just a few months. It was over the course of just a few months after I made that prayer, and I entered into the relationship with the five women that I told you are my very best friends to this day. He hears our words. These women that I'm friends with have earned the privilege of speaking into my life. These are the ones, like I said, who get to say hard things to me, who keep me grounded in my walk with Christ, in my marriage, and in my mothering. These are the women who love my children now and now speak words of life to them. My son just went on a mission trip over the summer to the Czech Republic, and my very best friend Amy was his leader. And she got the opportunity to say things to my baby because we have a relationship. We have a friendship. And that's a sweet and beautiful thing. These women are the voices, their voices are part of what I believe about myself. Choose wisely who you let be those voices in your world. Very wisely, because they're very important voices. They will help you know what you feel about yourself, so make sure they're the right voices. I have to make sure that I tell myself that I'm valuable to my family. I'm valuable to Scott. I'm valuable to the boys. That I'm the heart of my home, and that this purpose isn't just significant, isn't just sufficient. This purpose is grand. It is grand to have that be my purpose, to be the heart of our home. Are you surrounding yourself with voices of encouragement in that area? Please do. And if your answer is no, I really hope that MOPS can be a year at MOPS this year where you hear those words of encouragement that tell you you have a grand purpose. Do you shut out words to the contrary, words that are lies about you and about who defines you? I've been in relationships, thankfully, just a few, where I have had to learn to speak the words, I do not accept this, when there is death being spoken over me. And usually those words are words that are completely inconsistent with what I really know to be true about myself. Healthy boundaries against toxic input is the integral part of being able to hear words of life about yourself and being able to speak them to yourself. And finally, in this journey toward learning to speak words of life, I have had to discover what God says about me and about how much he loves me. To hear his voice, I had to know his words, so I read his words. In scriptures where I heard the words that I am seen and I am intimately known, that's Psalm 139:15, that I will never be abandoned by my God, that's John 10:28, and that I am holy and perfectly loved, Romans 5:8. He's the author of the ultimate words of life. I am his beloved, and because his life-giving words are in my life, I can speak them freely to each other, to others. And if you're here today and you are struggling with the words you believe about yourself, I hope upon hope that you will come to know that you are his beloved too. Until a couple of weeks ago, I was a junk-in-the-trunk virgin. I know, hard to believe that there's any of us left, okay? There was. I ended up there this year because I got to help Mama's Cold Brew, so thank you, Jen, for having a Mama's Cold Brew that I could help with. It was a lot of fun, and after my shift, I got to walk around and kind of look at everything, and oh my goodness, I'm sold. I'm a, what do you call it? Is a junk, what is the name for it? A junker? Junker? I don't know. I'm whatever. I'm hashtag whatever, okay? Hashtag, I love it. I'll never miss it. It's awesome. You guys already know that because you're cool. This day that I was walking around Junk in the Trunk, I happened to still be sort of processing what I wanted to say today. And I was having a little bit of trouble kind of getting it all to come together to really be satisfying to what I knew in my heart I wanted to say, but I was having trouble just kind of putting the words together. I had been praying a lot and thinking a lot and scribbling down little notes everywhere and then trying to find the little notes that I scribbled and put everywhere. That's the hardest part. I had a really good outline, but I was honestly, just like I said, I was struggling. But God never, ever fails to give us opportunities to speak his love for us through us. And I had been praying about this. And so as I wandered around Junk in the Trunk, I approached the Jackson Boulevard booth. Okay, Jackson Boulevard, I get it now. I get why everyone was running from the door to the Jackson Boulevard booth. So I'm in the process of praying this and thinking this, and I'm walking toward it, and there was literally a sign. I mean, come on, how, a sign? Like, is there a sign? There was a sign, like a literal sign, okay? And it was hanging front and center in my sight. And it said, and I have it here, and it made me cry, "This is your permanent and unshakable identity. You are God's beloved." And everything came into place. It all wrote itself. What I wanted to say today wrote itself, because it's not my words, it's his. If there is nothing that you remember from what you heard today, please let it be this truth. And I so hope that this year at MOPS, It can be a year where you hear words of life, where you speak them to your family, where you speak them to each other, and where you speak them to yourself. And I want to thank you for listening to my many, many words this morning.